Hey everybody, thanks for downloading this episode of the SoxProspects.com podcast. As always, we really appreciate it. One note we wanted to make up front. During this episode, we talk a lot about the Portland Sea Dogs and about players who may be promoted very soon here. Of course, one player who fits into both of those descriptions is Travis Shaw, who was promoted to the Pawtucket Red Sox from Portland on Monday the 26th. Unfortunately, we recorded this on Sunday the 25th, so we'll be talking about Travis as though he's one of the players on the Sea Dogs, even though he no longer is, simply because, well, things happen when you go a day plus after recording a podcast before uploading, which we unfortunately had to do this time. But anyway, rest of the podcast is still great, we hope. We hope you enjoy it, and again, thanks for listening. Hello, and thank you for downloading the SoxProspects.com podcast. We apologize. We know it's been a minute. My name is Chris Hatfield, and I am joined by Matt Hegel and Ian Kundle. Matt, hello.
Hey, Chris. Ian, how's it going?
Ian, hello.
Hi, guys. How are we doing?
We appreciate you hitting that download button and taking the listen. Like I said, I know it's been a minute, and I will personally apologize. That's on me. Quick note, frankly, we don't do this full time, and sometimes when real life stuff has to come first, things like this maybe get pushed to the side a little bit. Nothing bad or anything going on, but I've had something I've had to prioritize a little bit recently, so we apologize for not cutting one of these in a little bit, but we're back today. We've got a lot to talk about. New rankings, players pushing for promotions, all kinds of craziness. But first, hit on our introductory stuff. Make sure you're following us. In addition to on the website and on our news page, where there's all kinds of new content, the news page is news.soxprospects.com. Make sure you follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/soxprospects. We do not mine your information out, for the most part, to data companies. No, I'm kidding. We don't mine your information at all. We don't even have that capability. But get all of the news straight in your news feed instead of your sister's third cousin's friend talking about her cat. Instead of that, you'll see Sox Prospects stuff. Also follow us on the Twitters. The main site Twitter account is at Sox Prospects. Mine is at SP Chris Hatfield. That's with a T, not with a D like the astronaut. And by the way, at least every 2 weeks I get someone thanking me for being an astronaut, which is kind of funny.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's pretty absurd.
I thought you were a musician too.
Oh, well, that's who you get if you Google my name. But
okay.
Now if you Google my name, you get, did you mean Chris Hadfield with a D, the Canadian astronaut?
Oh, he's Canadian too. That's even worse.
Yeah, it's great. Well, didn't someone say I sounded Canadian once? Anyway, maybe that's why. But yeah, Hatfield with a T. Matt, what's yours?
It's Matt at Matt Hegel, SP. It's MATTHUEGEL, SP.
And Mr. Ian.
At Ian Kundall, IanCundall, and there will be no more soccer talk on my Twitter feed, I promise.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this. For anyone who needs context for how miserable the Red Sox are lately, we're recording this after they've just lost their 10th game in a row.
Isn't that many?
It's 10 in a row.
Oh my God.
Today's was especially bad.
Yes.
I watched some of today's game.
Ian has some context for us on what fans taking things too seriously is really like.
But is it too seriously? I mean, all right, so the context is the reason we're doing this later today was partly because Chris was in, you saw Portland and you were in Manchester today, right?
I was, Manch Vegas.
Okay, New Hampshire, interesting state. But anyway, I'm currently in the Great Britain, in London more specifically. And today I attended a soccer game that was a cup final for the League One playoff final. And basically the winner of that game got promotion to the next highest division, which is the second highest in British soccer. And the team that I was there supporting lost on penalties after blowing a 2-0 lead early in the first half. It wasn't very much fun after the
first
half.
Hold on. For those who don't know, nil means zero in British.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. But anyway, yes, included in that was a 35-yard volley wonder strike to tie the game. But Anyway,
I need a definition on that.
Yeah, Wonder Strike being a long kick.
All right.
And it was really impressive. It's like a, yeah, it was a really good, it was, shouldn't have won it, basically. But anyway, we were talking about this a little bit before, that you don't understand devastation, I don't think, until you see like 70-year-old men crying because of a sporting event.
And that's because the team you were there to see did not get promoted to the championship.
Not even the highest division, not even the Premier League, the second highest division. Mm-hmm. And it just means so much to these people, to everyone in the city, because, you know, the clubs are so regionalized here. It's not like in the States where everything's really spread out, you know what I mean? There's clubs all over the place of different sizes, and this is one of the smaller clubs in London with a chance to be playing with a bunch of the bigger clubs in London, basically. In the same division, and yeah.
Club is British for team.
Correct.
I was wondering.
I feel like it's also like if in Boston we had no Patriots, Bruins, or Celtics, and we're just all about the Red Sox.
Well, that is true. They don't care about any other sport here, really. So. Imagine, think about it this way, though. Imagine if like Portland could get promoted to AAA. Mm-hmm. How much would that mean to the city of Portland, Maine?
I was actually discussing European soccer with my fiance recently and used the minor league baseball example that you just gave.
But you know what I mean? Like how much that would mean a lot to the people there. And yep. So, yeah, it was a tough day overall. Cause I was right, literally sitting, you know, 30 feet from where the penalties were being taken and watching just these people who have been fans of this club. Cause more or less you're a fan of a club from birth most of the time, or just, you know, basically having their heart just like sucked out of them. It was depressing.
Yeah. Well, That's some perspective for those of you who are freaking out, at this point, maybe perhaps rightfully so, about the Red Sox.
Well, at the end of the tunnel, the Red Sox could have a high draft pick. There's no high draft pick for finishing, not getting promoted, so.
Yeah, I guess so. We've got a lot to cover, like I mentioned. And one last note, please rate and review us in iTunes. The more good ratings we get, the more people who listen, and the word gets spread about the SoxProspects.com podcast in all of its glory. So we appreciate if you would rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. I know I've started listening to a couple podcasts on TuneIn Radio app on my phone. What else is the Stitcher is an app, I believe. Wherever you listen to us, rate and review. We appreciate it. And if you think something's terrible, let us know before you review us, maybe. But I think I make that joke every week.
Yeah.
At any rate, or every week, like we do this weekly. At any rate, yeah, please rate and review. We really appreciate it. And one other note, programming note, we're not going to do a draft preview podcast this year, mostly because picking where the Red Sox are this year does not make a whole lot of sense. You know, we'd probably have to cover something like 50 guys they could potentially pick at that spot, and they could still not pick any of them.
About to say that the odds are more likely that we wouldn't get any of them.
Right. So, but we will have all kinds of draft coverage. Like I said, keep tuned to news.soxprospects.com and our Twitter feeds, and we'll have all of the coverage there for you.
And I'm sure we'll have a wrap up podcast as well, which will be much more informative.
Right.
I'm sure.
Right. Well, to the degree you think that this is an informative podcast, then.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Well, lots to talk about. As Ian alluded to, we'll get into our first topic. I have seen three games between the Portland Sea Dogs, yay, and the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, boo, over the last 3 days. I'm going tomorrow as well. I would like to thank Portland for having the being so considerate as to come into Manchester in my neck of the woods. Over Memorial Day weekend when I actually have time to go see them.
So is tomorrow matinee?
Yes, it is. It is. It is like, a 1 o'clock start.
That's always nice.
Yes, yes. So always a good thing when the game is early, so it is not 11 when you get home. For example, if you go to a game where the final is 18-0, like I saw last night. Ian, you saw Portland when?
In April.
In April.
I think it was after we did the last podcast, though, so.
So yeah, lots of Portland to talk about, and I'm trying to think: is there any? Who do you think that people who are listening may want to hear about?
Matt Spring.
Matt Spring. Well, actually, since you mentioned him, I'd like to point out great article by Tim Healy on our news page, which you may have heard is news.soxprospects.com, where he interviewed Matt Spring and about life as let's be honest here, an orc guy. You know, Spring has was you know nice enough to kind of let him into the mind of the orc soldier, so to speak. A great piece to read on there. But I'm guessing that people may want to hear about someone else first. Maybe Mookie Betts.
Yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Yes. We'll talk about the rankings in a little bit. I don't really want to talk about the rankings yet, but Mookie doing what he's doing, it's all been written about plenty. 66 game on base streak, 71 if you include playoffs. Second only all time in the minors to a guy by the name of Ted Williams, who you may have heard of, I believe. Why he is doing what he is doing. The plate approach. Ian, what did you see there? And maybe I can kind of supplement it with what I saw.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing is the at bats. He just controls every at bat. I think you mentioned it on Twitter today. He just doesn't swing at bad pitches ever. He just goes up to the plate. Ever. He knows exactly what he's looking at. He works at bats. He'll take borderline pitches confidently, which matters. If you're confident that you know the strike zone, the umpire is going to see that, and they're going to, you know, you're going to steal a few calls your way that. And he just goes up there and, yeah, he just gets his fastball, and then when he gets his pitch to hit, he attacks it. I mean, he's got plus bat speed, loose at the plate, athletic, and then when he gets on base, he's a menace on the base pass also, because he's a very good instinctual base runner who has plus speed also. So I think he's got like 22, 23 steals this year, caught twice.
I think today was his 23rd.
22nd, I believe. And he's been caught three times.
Exactly. It's a really impressive ratio. And, oh, yeah, he's hitting .366 along with that with some pop. I mean, I will say the over-the-fence power, I'm not sure how much is going to translate to the big leagues. I think it's probably more of like a 12 to 15 home run profile. Mm-hmm. But along with that, it could be 40, you know, 35, 40 doubles. Mm-hmm. Because he just lives gap to gap. And
he barrels everything up.
Exactly. It's hard contact to all fields. Like, I know I was just looking back at the game notes from the game I saw. I think he had three hits in the game, and one to center field, one to left field, one to right field. You know, it's just all over the park. He doesn't get pull happy. He doesn't try to do too much. It's just, he's going to hit it where it's pitched. I know it's cliche to say, but that's what he does.
Yeah. I've seen three games now. On Friday night, he went 0-for-5, which is kind of like seeing a jackalope or something.
What is a jackalope?
Exactly. but you know, yesterday he walked twice. Let's see, had a double, walked again with two strikes. You know, he's comfortable taking close pitches. He's not going to expand the zone at all for anybody. And that's kind of what makes him so dangerous, is you're not going to get him to chase. I think that's the thing that kind of gets left behind. In the field, I honestly haven't seen him do very much. I've seen him play center field twice now, because he started playing center field on May 18th. He has now played center field in 6 of the 10 games he's played since then. That's over 8 days, because they had 2 doubleheaders and he hasn't sat yet. My guess is a bunch of these guys are going to sit tomorrow, but oh well. And now that Shannon Wilkerson was promoted, actually, he's probably going to be the full-time center fielder, I bet, with occasional mixing in of, like, maybe Peter Hissey will get some time at center. But at any rate, I haven't been able to see much, for those wondering what he looks like in center. The only plays he's had have been, you know, can of corn-type easy pop flies that any, you know, minor leaguer worth his salt you would expect to be able to get under and catch. So jury's still out there on how he looks out there. But I'll have something hopefully on ESPN Boston this week talking a little bit about that transition and some quotes from Mookie.
Well, and I do know, I'm pretty sure George Lombard, the roving outfield instructor, is in Portland. Am I incorrect with that?
I believe you are correct.
So I'm sure he's getting plenty of tutelage. And we all know, we've heard the stories about him, and I've seen it actually live. He goes hard during BP in the outfield. Mm-hmm.
Power
and
shag,
he's been doing that. He's been doing that his entire career. So,
right.
I mean, he's got the athleticism. I don't think the transition's a very big deal. He should be fine out there.
Ian, who else did stuck out for you that you saw? Maybe we'll just do a couple more hitters and then a couple of pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough to cut down the hitters because they go like six deep with guys hitting over 300.
Who are prospects.
Yeah.
I think at point, even some of the quote org guys that are there are hitting well too.
Yeah. But I think the next guy I'd like to touch on is Travis Shaw, mm-hmm. who I know you saw a hit home run, maybe two home runs. I'm not sure.
We'll check. At least one.
But anyway, Shaw, I mean, we all know last year in Portland, he looked lost at times. I remember seeing him at the end of the season there, and he was just getting destroyed by fastballs up in the zone. He was behind everything. He was swinging at breaking balls halfway in the other batter's box. His approach just regressed, and there was just a lot of swing and miss. And it seems like he's kind of returned to more of what he was doing the previous season and earlier when he was down with Salem in Greenville, where he's working counts, taking walks. He's got more walks than strikeouts right now. And the power is actually starting to come back too, which was the big thing that kind of left him last year. And I'm not sure he's the answer long to you and I were having it. Chris and I were discussing this actually yesterday over G-Chat. I'm not sure he's the answer long term, but he's pushing for promotion to Pawtucket. I would think June 1st. I would not be shocked if he's promoted. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. He's someone I definitely want to get another look at because I mean I've seen him good, I've seen him bad, and he's always kind of been more of a second division guy in my opinion. And I know from talking to scouts, I know some who don't even think he's a major leaguer. Whereas others are more on the second division bandwagon.
Well, here's the thing with that. The reason we say that is that the bar is so high to be a major league first baseman. Even in this era of depressed offense, it's really hard. You can't hit, 250, 350, 400. Oh, maybe you could. Well, but the rest of the offense would have to be so good.
And this is the other thing, though. If you look at like someone like James Loney, for example, mm-hmm. with Tampa Bay, he doesn't have great pop. He'll hit for a decent average. I think he's like 280, 300. He's a fantastic defensive first baseman. Mm-hmm. Shaw's he's not a slouch, but he's not an elite defensive first baseman like James Loney is.
And speaking about defense a little bit, I did see Shaw at third base the other night. He didn't have many plays over there, but part of the problem, he doesn't have a ton of – he's not super rangy.
He's a big guy. He's not. Yeah.
He's a big guy. He's not going to get to his left or right very quick, reacting to balls. Him at third base is a depth.
That's what I was about.
It's not Kevin Youkilis, working both corners.
No, but if he can field the position even like slightly below average, just be your backup third baseman on the roster,
useful bench bat.
That's a very important. That's something that could help him along the way. Mm-hmm. So. I mean, I think he's definitely making strides, and he's someone that I think is going to get some more. He'll get a little more press now that he's actually, putting it together. But
he hit the ball hard all three games. I saw the home run was on a 92-mile-per-hour fastball low and in. He just kind of lined it, out to right field. It wasn't a majestic shot. It's one of those that just got out in a hurry. And he's made a couple of very loud outs. For those who haven't been to Manchester, it's a very deep center field, especially center field and left center power alley are very, very deep there. Yesterday's 18-0 game would have probably been over 20 in another park. It was kind of absurd how hard the Portland team was hitting the ball. He's had a home run, or no, sorry, he made one F8 that was probably about 370 feet to left center. And today he had a line out to left, actually, that was hit very hard on an 81-mile-per-hour pitch. So he's hitting the ball with some authority, which is good to see.
I mean, it's not like he's a spring chicken anymore. He's 24 mm-hmm. years old. Like, I think he needs a new challenge at this point. I think you guys would probably agree with this. And, yeah, I think it's going to come sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. How about Matt? Since you haven't had the chance to go to Portland, who else might you want to hear about?
Yeah, actually, I had Henry Ramos on my mind. he's obviously been putting up great stats. I mean, I think it's 341. That might be after probably before today's game. Mm-hmm. But 341, 385, 453. So those are all there. The strikeout to walk ratio isn't as good as you might hope. In light of those numbers, but I'm sure there'll be some regression. But what have you guys seen from a scouting perspective, I guess.
Let me jump in real quick because Ramos did not play on Saturday or Sunday. Apparently, he's got a little bit of a shoulder ding. It's not. I don't think it's DL worthy yet necessarily, but they've had the luxury of, you know, giving him a breather, especially with Mookie moving to the outfield.
Derek Gibson's playing outfield too.
He is. Yeah. But yeah, Ramos a little dinged up right now. The thing I've noticed with Ramos, I know we talked about on G-Chat, Ian, was he's very thick now, especially in the lower half. Very athletic build, but
he's not 187.
No.
He's listed at 187.
Not
it's
a chance.
It's 220.
Yes, yes. I saw him fly out to the track. He's another one of those guys that has been kind of maybe screwed over a little bit by the dimensions in Manchester, but at the same time he had a single in center field that should have been caught, but that New Hampshire Fisher Cats team is terrible. So, yeah, that one fell in. So, you know, the field taketh away, the team on the field giveth, I guess, is what happened there. Pretty good. Okay and right. Didn't really see anything too great or too bad. Ian, what do you have?
Yeah, I mean, he's only played in one of the games I've seen also this year. As Chris mentioned, the body, it's gradually improved over the years, and it's not like he's like fat or anything. He's just, he's proportioned. He's built. He's sturdy. Yep. His swing's a little long, especially from the right side, but it's definitely shortened up since when he first entered and when I've seen him down at spring training and in structs before. He's actually a decent runner still. And I think the big thing for me is he's just looks to be tracking the ball better. And he's just staying on it longer. And as a result, he's making more contact, obviously. And so that was what stood out to me when I saw him. I've only seen the four plate appearances, but it was especially noticeable when he was batting left-handed. He was tracking the ball directly into the glove, which is something you always like to see. And he seemed to have a much better handle of the strike zone. Granted, I did see him get eaten up by a couple curveballs, like by a good lefty, but still, I mean, he's another one I'm interested to see more of, but I think there might be something there, but in terms of, I got to see, we're going to need to see more because it's a lot of contact, but it's not a lot of pop as I'm just looking at the page right now. It's 58 hits, but only 13 extra base hits. Mm-hmm. And it's a right field only. He's not a center fielder.
Right.
And that's more of an issue because if you're a right fielder, it's kind of like first base. It's a lot of teams think of it as the premium offensive position. So,
right. And then I guess let's just do quick hits on the other big guys there. Cause I don't really have much to say about some of them. Devin Marrero looks fantastic defensively. As he typically does at short, arm for days. He's a great defender there. I've seen him throw. I saw one play yesterday where he literally dove into the hole, full extension, got up and threw a guy out at first, and it wasn't like it was a base clogger he was throwing out either. So he's got the arm. He can pick it. Has looked good approach-wise, too, although not really many hits. I don't think he's got one single, I think, in the whole time I've seen him, but so maybe struggling a little bit at the plate right now, actually, now that I look at my notes. Lots of ground outs. Ian, did you have he's walked a ton, I'll tell you that, so the approach is there.
That's what I was going to say. He's controlling at bats, and I mean, he's never going to be – this is never a guy who's going to be a premium offensive talent, I mean, or even – he's going to be one of those guys who he could maybe hit for a decent average, like a 260, 270, you know, average at the plate, and then 5 to 8 home runs maybe, mm-hmm. but at playing premium defense at shortstop, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, and he's don't sleep on him as a defender. I mean, he's not going to be as flashy as Jose Iglesias because Iglesias is absurd, but he's probably the second best defensive player I've seen behind Iglesias in the Red Sox infield, like prospect mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
Since I've started doing this.
I can agree with
that. And so, you know, if they want to go the defense first route at shortstop, he could have definitely big league future with the Red Sox, mm-hmm. if not someone else.
Yeah, you can justify starting him at short and hitting him anywhere from 6th to 9th, depending on how he's going at the time, I think. I don't think he'll ever hit in the top of the lineup, though.
No, I don't. Yeah, I agree with that.
Blake Swihart, I don't have a ton to say. I got a 194 pop time, which, Ian, what does that grade out to? That's
Slightly above average.
Slightly above average.
Average is 2.0, yep. Which is that's about the range I've been getting him in, like 188 to 195.
Yep. Some hit a few on the screws on Friday. Yesterday he had a kind of a rough game. Or no, he did have one single, but grounded into a couple double plays. Although, frankly, after the third inning, that game was just ridiculous, so it's hard to evaluate anything that was going on. That was the game, for those who are listening and don't know. Blue Jays starter Aaron Sanchez, who was a top 100 prospect, lasted all of six batters and had zero control whatsoever, and the Sea Dogs won 18 to nothing. He looked good to me. Nothing different there from the scouting report for me. I don't know if you've got anything really to add there, Ian.
No, he's the same guy. He's fine. He's young. He'll hit eventually. He hits. He's making a lot of contact. The power will come. I think it's in there. Mm-hmm. Just give him some time.
Mm-hmm. All right. On the mound, I charted both Henry Owens and Brian Johnson. Owens sat, 88 to 90. Frankly, touching 91. I think he may have thrown one at 92. The whole night, but that said, the changeup is a weapon. He's not afraid to throw it in any count. That's 74 to 77 drops off the table. 78 even drops off the table. He was using the big loopy curve, but frankly didn't use it very often because New Hampshire stacked the lineup with righties against him. It was actually kind of funny. There was only one lefty in the whole lineup, which usually don't see that in the minors, frankly. He had a great outing, especially considering that he threw the 18-0 game and he had four different occasions where he sat for a significant amount of time while Portland scored at least three runs or more, which there's something to be said for getting out there and maintaining your focus, especially for someone like him who has struggled with his fastball command and his command generally. He gets in the mound and he throws it. He works quickly, not quite as quickly as the next guy we'll mention, but I was impressed by what I saw. I still didn't necessarily see an ace or, a front of the rotation guy because I just want to see how this repertoire plays at higher levels. The loopy curveball, the one time he didn't use it often, the one time it did get hit, it got smoked to left for an out, but it was hit very hard right at the left fielder. Have you had the chance to see him yet, Ian?
Yeah, I saw him earlier this year. And I saw him at 87, 89. He touched 90 a few times. The changeup, as you said, is a weapon. I mean, that was what he was using all night to get his swings and misses against righties and lefties. He barely threw the curveball. Is actually similar to what you were saying. And I think the big thing, I mean, it is a very – he gets a lot of deception in his delivery, and it's a very hard pitch to hit. He's tough to hit. I mean, as you can see, is the numbers back that up. He's given up 38 hits in 57 innings. That's you don't do that. That's no joke. And the deception, it seems like the ball comes from right behind his head and from his ear. And you just don't pick it up until really late. It was clearly noticeable when I was watching him earlier this year that it jumps on you really quickly. And so even though he's only throwing, below average to average velocity, it gets there a lot quicker. But the thing is, just because he's deceptive, that doesn't make him an ace.
Right.
You can't get you're not going to get away with deception. I mean, you can be a very good pitcher pitching with and your deception can help you out, but you need more to profile as an ace. And aces are guys who have three potential, seven pitches, which is double plus, pitches, or two elite pitches and then one plus pitch. And right now Owens, it's more of it's going to be a plus fastball, I think, because of a combination of the deception. And if he can command it, it's potentially future. Right now, it's about plays at average. It's a plus changeup, but the curveball, it's more of an average pitch. And going straight off that profile, that's not an ace or two profile.
Yeah, I did see him get strikeouts with the curve, but it's almost because it's so surprising. The first strikeout was looking, and it just froze the guy because it was the first curve he threw all game. Threw it for a ball. I did want to say one thing with the changeup. He's not afraid to triple it up. He had one batter he threw it five times to, including 3-2.
I had the same thing. Against lefties, he his lefty Matt Clark with Binghamton, who's one of the leading hitters in the Eastern League. He's like 28, which is probably why. But he threw it four times in one at bat, and then three more times in another at bat. So yeah, he's got confidence in the pitch, and he has a really good feel for it. So
it almost looks like a curveball sometimes. It moves so much too. It just I think, oh, that's, you know, hard curve. It's like, oh, nope, that was the changeup.
What about the idea of him adding like a harder breaking ball, a slider or cutter, maybe, especially, you know, that some pitchers add cutters later, AAA. That seems like something that might help him out.
That's a good question. Ian, what do you think?
I think...
That's a good question. You answer it.
Put me on the spot there. I've talked to a couple people who have mentioned that before, and I think it's been mentioned before on, I want to say, Baseball Prospectus or something, where someone mentioned that they thought he could add a cutter. I mean, the thing is with lefties, he doesn't really have that. His changeup has huge variation from his fastball, even though he only throws like 90. Because his changeup is usually, I don't know what you had it as, Chris, but when I saw it earlier this year, it was like 76 to 78 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's about what I had it at.
And so he's still got, you know, 12 to 14 miles per hour difference. And so if he could add in a cutter in, you know, a mid, like an 84, 85 mile per hour cutter in there to add in as just another weapon, something he can run away from lefties. You can bust righties in with it. Then that could really help out, because especially when the changeup, he seems to favor it against left-handed hitters. Granted, he'll throw it to both, but it seems to favor it to lefties, and it's more effective against lefties, at least I've seen.
He threw it a ton against all the righties he faced last night for me. Mostly because that's all he was facing too. But
that could be that. But yeah, I just think, I mean, it's definitely something that could happen, but I don't think they're going to, you know, make him do it if he continues to get results like
that. To me, the question is what they do with that curve, because the curveball right now is like 71 to 7, I think 72. I got it at 73 a couple times.
Yeah, I saw it 69
to
72.
It's big and it's loopy, and I just don't know if it plays in the majors. We'll see. I mean, good for him for being all, you know, I'm going to use this till it doesn't work, because, hey, why not? But
what I think he talked about with John Mioli from our site before, that he's toyed with the harder curveball, but he just doesn't really like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had heard that last year, actually, right?
There's only so much you can do. If he doesn't feel like he has, you know, good command or control over the pitch and doesn't, or feel of it in general, then you're not going to force him to throw that. Mm-hmm. So.
The other guy I saw on Charted was Brian Johnson. I saw him today. Was he there when you saw Portland yet, Ian?
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't. All right, yeah, so I saw Johnson today. His velo was down a little bit from where we've seen him in the past. He was living about 89 to 91. He did start to pick up velocity a little bit later on in the game. He touched 92, 93 a couple times. I think he was basically working in the four seam a little bit. But the thing you notice with Johnson, I mean, we talk about high floor, low ceiling with him. He's a guy that knows how to pitch with an arsenal that's not like, he doesn't have the Henry Owens ridiculous changeup. Although, you know, the curveball for him today was a very, very good pitch. Most of the time when he threw it, he got really bad contact on it. But that's the thing is the curveball is a really bad, well, at least today was a really bad contact pitch. It wasn't a strikeout pitch, although I think he got at least one strikeout on the curve. But yeah, he basically goes fastball, inside, outside, everything. You can tell, okay, that pitch, even if you're not necessarily a scout, you could say, okay, that pitch, he was trying to throw it on the black outside, and he was either successful or maybe off by a hair. You know, would live, you know, fastball away, curveball, ground out. You know, he did a very good job of inducing very bad contact, where Owens kind of gave up a couple of really loud outs last night. But Johnson today didn't, until, you know, they kind of got to him a little bit in the 6th, I think, was when they scored the run. But that said, when he got guys on base, he was able to get either a double play ball or, I know Michael Brenly threw a guy out at third on one attempted steal. And then, on another play, he actually picked a guy off successfully. He's got a pretty good move. He's very athletic. He made a couple plays in the field. You can tell he used to play both ways in college. I liked what I saw from him. I see future back of the rotation guy in a good sense of, I would be surprised if he isn't a back of the rotation guy. That said, I don't know if it goes much higher than that. Also had some good recommendations for places to go in Gainesville when I asked him, because that's where my fiance lives now. But yeah, I liked what I saw out of Johnson. Works really fast, which is great for both fans and fielders.
That's the best.
He works so fast that the person keeping the box score in Portland missed a pitch. like straight up missed one of the pitches he threw in the first inning. So yeah, he works really fast. He basically catches the ball on the mound back from the catcher and just throws, which is outstanding. He's like the anti-Buchholz in that sense. So I really liked what I saw out of Brian Johnson today. You know, he went fastball. The curve was his, the second pitch. Changeup looked okay. You know, 81 to 82, maybe a little higher than that, 83. The horrible thing about the notes I take is they're impossible to look at after the fact. Curveballs, you know, 76 to 78. He did mix in a couple of cutters, only a few, maybe like four of them tops. But that said, when he threw it, I think if he threw four, he got swings and misses on two or three of them. You know, he kind of mixed it. He knows how to mix them in, knows how to pitch. He's a guy that I think he'll probably be in Portland the rest of this year because there's no reason to push him. But I would be stunned if he didn't begin next year with Pawtucket. You know, he's a guy who's ready. He'll after some time, he'll be ready to step up to the next level. He just, you know, he is what he is. He'll you know, continue to develop, and at some point, he'll be a major league starting pitcher, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess that the biggest thing you took away is that he knows how to pitch. I mean, I know other people have said that, but just because of the fact that he was a two-way player in college and didn't really focus on pitching, and then of course had the batted ball accident to the face in Lowell. Mm-hmm. Well, he's with Lowell, so he missed a lot of that season too. So
yeah.
So yeah, he's shown good development, I think,
in a short amount of time. I asked him about that after the game, how much at this point, now that we're actually into the season and he can feel it at this point, how important it was to have an off season. And he said, yeah, absolutely. He's like, between my fitness, my ability to pitch, he even said, you know, my physical weight is different because I didn't spend the, you know, I mean,
right.
He had his jaw wired shut and was literally doing the, you know, to ape the line from Kanye West, boost for breakfast and ensure for dessert diet, you know, the liquid diet. You know, he was able to have the full off season and it's paying off. You know, sometimes with guys, you do have to just kind of write off, you know, large parts of a season due to other circumstances. And I think that's what we saw with him in Greenville last year. He wasn't ready to begin the season. And I almost wonder if that's part of why we saw guys like Ty Buttrey and Trey Ball not promoted to Greenville until, you know, a month, month and a half into the season, because they wanted to make sure they were ready before they sent them there, which that's probably a discussion we'll have in a little bit. Anyway, whether they actually are yet. Not much else to report from there. I did see Mike Ogliera on Friday night. Looked good, but, you know, he allows a lot of contact. He had a good defense behind him. If he makes it to the bigs, he might be a useful middle reliever, but that's frankly the ceiling I see for him right now, despite what the numbers may bear out. I'll be seeing Keith Couch tomorrow, piggybacking Stephen Wright. So that'll be interesting. Apparently Stephen Wright is back. Frankly, at this point, it just looks like they waited to bring Stephen Wright out of extended until there was an open spot in the Pawtucket rotation, because there was just no reason to add him yet with five prospects in that rotation. So he's going to get a rehab start in Portland. Apparently they have a doubleheader next week he'll throw in, and then we'll see from there. And Noe Ramirez looked very good out of the bullpen on Friday night. Throws from that low three-quarters delivery, but again, the fastball was, you know, 89 mostly. Touched 90 was the highest I think I saw. The bottom falls out of the changeup, 82 to 83. I think that's all I saw. He got a strikeout on a changeup at 84. But he's a major league reliever, it looked like. So I think that's everyone useful that I've seen in Portland. Yeah, I think that's Portland. Anything else to add? Any questions from you, Matt, or anything to add, Ian?
I was just going to quickly touch on someone that I know I've been getting some questions on Twitter. Robbie Scott, I don't know if he threw when you were there.
He has not thrown yet. He'll probably throw tomorrow, I'm guessing.
I saw him this year. And, I mean, it's not a sexy profile. It's a left-handed reliever profile. But, I mean, he's a little interesting. I mean,
loogie or middle reliever?
No, it's a loogie. It's not a middle reliever. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's probably it's like a sixth inning profile. So a fastball is like high 80s. It's like 87, 88. Curveball is like it's a two plane break, long 11-5 sweeper, and then the changeup has straight change, but has some late drop, which actually is pretty deceptive. Like 79-81, and he'll mix in. He'll cut the fastball, throw some two seamers. It's one of those guys, you know, he knows what he's doing on the mound. He manipulates the ball. It's not the sexiest like stuff or velo, but as long as you're getting outs and you're left-handed, you have a shot of pitching in the big leagues. So
beautiful. All right. Well, now that we've spent 30 minutes on a topic we allotted 15 for, let's move on. we should probably just touch on this quick then. We had a little shake up atop of our Sox prospects rankings. And while I'm normally kind of loath to talk too much rankings because it's all so subjective, it's worth addressing because Xander Bogaerts and Jackie Bradley both graduated. So we had a new number one prospect in Mookie Betts, and I know we've already talked about him, and frankly our top three right now on the website is Mookie Betts, followed by Henry Owens and Blake Swihart, all three who we've talked about here. We did have a piece on the news page, which, as you may have heard, can be found at news.soxprospects.com. Basically looking at the site brass and our decision in coming to, you know, our thoughts in coming to that point where we put Mookie Betts as the top guy, because fair or not, the position of being the top prospect in the system is one that's, you know, it's got some cachet to it in terms of how people view you. And to me, after thinking about it, it seemed like sort of an easy decision. But let's start with Matt, because frankly, we want to make sure people hear you, Matt. So, what were your thoughts in terms, you know, really briefly, I guess, in terms of how to kind of go about the rankings atop the system?
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I agreed as well that Bet should be the top. I know at first we had Henry Owens as the next guy up after Bogaerts, Bradley, before they graduated. It was Owens, but Betts, you know, really just took it to a new level. The real question in the offseason was, you know, would he be able to repeat his performance? Would he be able to make the jump to Portland? And he did all those things with flying colors. And it's not like, to me, with Owens, it's a little more of a situation where the stats don't match the scouting as well. But with Betts, I don't see that at all. It seems like all the scouting, you know, matches up with the stats for the most part. I mean, the only thing you could question is power, maybe, but it's not like that's... You don't expect that to go down usually for prospects in the majors very, very much to a large degree. So, you know, to me, Henry Owens doesn't have the same kind of ceiling as you know, a real star like Betts does. And then in terms of the other guys, I think, you know, Swihart and Cicchini were in the discussion as well. Cicchini, I've seen a good amount of him at Pawtucket, and I'm just a little more convinced at this point that he sort of is what he is. He's not, I don't think he's going to add a ton more power. The defense is, you know, it's as advertised. It's a little shaky. I've seen some errant throws from him. And you know, I think he'll probably be round out to be close to average maybe, but it's not, you know, it's not going to be it's definitely going to be
a work in progress.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think it's going to get anywhere where he's, you know, close to above average or anything. And then Swihart to me is kind of the wild card. I really like him. I kind of want to see more. It just, with catchers, there's a lot that goes into that development, and I just want to see how he deals with all those different facets of the game, and, you know, if he can continue to hit through all that. I think I don't really have that many questions about the bat, but just in terms of leadership and all that stuff, I don't really have real questions with that, but I just want to sort of see him prove it a little bit longer before I'd be willing to sort of go to consider him a top prospect.
Yeah, because the thing you got to remember is catchers develop differently. than other players, and he's also a switch hitter. So he basically has three facets that are very hard to you know, kind of learn, whereas you take a player that, you know, has their position, they play it, maybe they already play it very well. You know, Devin Marrero has one thing to work on, and that's, you know, hitting from one side of the plate, whereas Swihart has two sides of the plate plus, you know, a very difficult position to learn before you get to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I
exactly.
see it.
Yeah.
Ian, how about you?
I also had Betts first. I don't really need to touch on him anymore. I will say I had Swihart second, and that was mostly I thought about I considered the other two, but there was a decent gap between Swihart and them, because for me, the Swihart's potential profile as above average hitter with pop for both sides of the plates, who can also play fringe or solid average plus defense, that's a potential all-star in my opinion. And so that ceiling, granted, the odds of him reaching it are not very high because he's a catcher. For the reasons you said, he has a lot he's got to focus on. But just that overall package was better to me than what I think Cecchini is or Owens as a potential, you know, number three starter. So I had Swihart too. Other than that, don't really have anything to add.
Yeah, I had Betts number one. And the way I put this in the piece that's on the news page is he has done a better job to this point of answering the questions we had about him. You know, Cecchini, the questions coming in were power and defense, and those are still lacking in his game. With Swihart, it's just a matter of kind of the process, and I don't think it's not that he hasn't failed to answer them. It's not that he has either. His line is great. You know, 285, 322, 451 entering today. You know, he's been perfectly fine. He's doing perfectly well. I don't think he has fallen in any respect. Whereas Cecchini, I think it may have fallen a little bit at this point for me. Not a ton, and he's still a very good prospect. I'm not throwing him, you know, I'm not burying him or anything. I think he's a major leaguer somewhere. Owens, to me, I would like to see more consistent fastball command like I saw yesterday. He's had some outings where he's gotten hit. I mean, he had a four-inning no-hit appearance the other day where he walked five guys. That's basically a microcosm of who he is. He's very hard to hit at the level he's pitching at, but he also needs to command the zone better. Betts, the question with him has been, was last year a fluke? And so far, it turns out it hasn't been. And that's what it came down to for me. You know, I look at our top 10 on the website right now. I think I might be with you, Ian, where I might have Swihart ahead of Owens, but to me, they're close. We've since moved, or on the website at least, moved Matt Barnes ahead of Cecchini. I probably have to look closer at that, but I think I get that, and it might be where I'm at as well. We then go Webster, Renato, Workman, which I think with those guys, I think it's Webster a little bit ahead of Renato. And then Workman, I'm not sure where I'd put him right now because he's been very good in Pawtucket. And I didn't get to see his start today, but it seems like he was pretty good. Fellas?
I only saw like two innings.
Matt, I think you were watching, right?
Oh, Workman? Oh,
Workman,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking he was in Pawtucket. I was like, why would I have seen his start? it was pretty good. He was in control for most of the outing. Started strong. They started as he went through the lineup a second and third time. Started to get hit a little more, and then he had a problem with he gave up a home run. So that's that. When I saw him, he gave up four hits, and all four were solo home runs. So that was sort of the issue. The time I saw him, and he again gave up a home run in this outing. But overall, I mean, he definitely was competitive and looks like he can be a major league starting pitcher, in my opinion.
Beautiful. And I guess at this point, let's get to one reader email. This is from Steven Martano, and Steven asks, we're getting to it now because it kind of makes sense in the context here, but hi guys, I had the pleasure to see Mookie Betts in New Britain a couple weeks back. Well, I can't think of any more superlatives to add that haven't already been written. What do you think the future holds for him and the organization? Clearly, Boston is struggling to find a corner outfield thumper. Do you think we could see a prospect blockbuster with, say, the Dodgers for Jock Peterson, which I've heard all over the place? By heard all over the place, I mean on our forum and speculation, not actual rumors it'll happen. Or a player of similar pedigree. Thanks and keep up the great work, Steven in Fairfield. First off, prospect for prospect trades don't happen very often for kind of a reason. It's very hard to do. Teams are just, they're familiar with their guy and they kind of want to roll with them. I can't see them trading him at this point unless it's for a proven major leaguer. You know, if they were going to go get someone like a Cliff Lee, I could see it happening. But I'm not even speculating he would be in that deal. I'm just saying proven major leaguer who can help them right now. The fact that you're seeing him in center field shows that they're kind of looking down the road because there's nothing doing at second base anytime soon in Boston. The fit is certainly an issue, but I think they'll deal with that when it happens. You know, especially because the Red Sox outfield is really hurting right now. I was listening to an interview with Ben Cherington where he said that Betts might get time at other outfield positions as well. It was on Alex Spear's podcast. It's interesting. I don't know if either of you guys have much to add to that.
Not really. I mean, I don't see that happening either. The only way you're going to trade Betts, I think, is like you said, for a proven star, pretty much. Someone like, you know, I hesitate to mention, but Giancarlo Stanton, someone like that, which I don't think we see is going to be happening anytime soon, probably. But that would be the kind of guy that you would think about moving Betts in. It's sort of getting to the Bogarts territory from last year, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And actually, since you went there, we also got an email from Andy O'Donnell, and Andy asked, getting beyond the much appreciated ball washing of the podcast, there are no official rumors floating around the internet. Many people are conjecturing that we should trade some of our top-level prospects for an elite-proven major league talent like Giancarlo Stanton and sign him to a long-term extension. Stanton possesses elite power, and that is very rare to find in the majors these days. Truth. My question is as follows. Given what happened with the Red Sox acquiring Adrian Gonzalez and then trading him to L.A. in the Nick Punto deal, do you feel there is an organizational shift in their philosophy regarding prospects? Would Ben trade for Stanton if the price is right? What would you trade for Stanton if you could do a deal of this nature? In my opinion, doing trades of this nature was pivotal to the Red Sox winning 3 championships in the last decade. It's how we got Pedro Schilling and Beckett Lowell. Thank you, Andy O'Donnell. I think it's opportunity, frankly. It's the right trade. First of all, do we all agree Giancarlo Stanton's not getting traded anytime soon?
He's not even an arbitration eligible, I think, for 2 more years. So there's no point. They have a minimum for next year.
And the way the Red Sox are playing, it's not looking like someone they would be, you know, they'd be forcing their hand this year. You know, be a future thing.
They're kind of bent over a barrel, so to speak, if I may be a little crass. They're not in the position of power in this trade, because if you look at, you know, the Pedro deal, the Schilling deal, and the Beckett Lowell deal, those were after successful seasons. Maybe, you know, they made the playoffs after each, I think, if I'm remembering right. Or at least they were, you know, they weren't in last place when they made those trades. You don't make trades like that from last place. You know, if the outfield were the only question they had and they had not just lost 10 games in a row, then maybe, I don't know. It's interesting because the outfield is kind of what's killing them right now, because they're hitting their outfielders 7, 8, 9 right now.
Well, none of them are hitting. So,
right. That's the point I was making. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they could use an outfielder who can hit, but I just think the reason you don't see a trade like that is because the outlay in players is going to be so high. That's why they don't make those trades. If you look at what they gave up for guys like Gonzalez and Pedro and Schilling and Beckett Lowell, it's prices you are willing to pay. The highest price they paid, I think, was in the Beckett Lowell deal with Hanley and with Anibal Sanchez. But I mean, part of the thing with Hanley was questions about his character, frankly.
As I was about to say, makeup played a huge issue in that deal. Because if Hanley was had the makeup of someone, say, like Bogarts or Betts, I don't think they would have been a lot more hesitant to include him in a trade like that.
And I was thinking the converse. If Mookie Betts was a dick, they'd be looking to trade him, you know? that's the thing, because that's the kind of thing you don't necessarily scout, and sure, you hear rumors, but it's one of those things, it's like a lottery ticket. Is it going to bother you or not in the majors?
Well, and that's the one thing that is the hardest thing for scouts from other teams to figure out, I get these questions all the time. You know, what do you think of this guy off the field? What are you hearing? Because they have, it's something you as an organization, you're not going to tell them, and they're not, you know, it's not something where they can go follow these guys around off the field and see what they're doing or whatever.
And right. So that's insight you have as an organization, and you can use that to your advantage in deals like that. Obviously, Hanley Ramirez has turned into a hell of a player, but still, you know, that definitely factored in.
Right, right. And I mean, it's like I said, it's a matter of opportunity. Where's, you know, entering this season, for example, where was the hole to fill? There wasn't a hole so much as, to me, I think the problem was this, that you needed everyone to play up to their potential and you were fine. Versus what has happened is no one is.
I think one of the outfield spots, though, because they were, if you're banking on Grady Sizemore to be your start, one of your starting outfielders.
Well, now, sure. But I think entering the season, it was, you know, Sizemore was brought in to compete with Bradley, and oh, crap, he's healthy. You know, once Nava, Gomes, and left wasn't working the way it did last year, then the outfield became a big question because Bradley wasn't hitting and Victorino was hurt. You know, it's just everything went, all three worst-case scenarios in the outfield happened at the same time.
Well, I think we're seeing it now that there's real issues with outfield depth in the upper minors, too. And so there's no help coming from Pawtucket, basically.
Right. Because Brents is hurt and Hassan isn't doing a ton. I admittedly haven't checked on him in a minute. Let me look.
Yeah, he's not doing a ton. He has
217, 319, 297 entering today. Yeah.
He's struggling.
I think he's got a little unlucky, too. But
Right.
I was going to say, I don't think that, you know, going back to the original question, I don't think it's any kind of shift in philosophy. I think that, you know, Charrington would pull the trigger for Stanton for the right deal. I think in a second.
If you're going to get Stanton straight up from Mookie Betts, then yeah, sure. Cool.
Right. Exactly. But honestly, it's, I think it would be getting to the point where it would be Mookie Betts plus, you know, it would be maybe one other top 10 prospect, something like that.
Oh, two minimum.
No. It's way more than that.
Yeah.
I just think Betts is getting to the point where he's a real elite prospect.
I think it's Betts, Owen, and Owen's another guy in the top 10 minimum. And then you're adding a couple B-level guys.
You're looking at, I mean, this is stupid to say, but you're looking at something like Betts, Owens, Renato. You're probably giving like...
One of the catchers...
Yeah, you'd have to get four or five guys we have in our top 20 on our site right now, and I don't think they would do that first off.
No. Yeah, I don't think the Red Sox would either.
So
I don't think either team would do it.
I just don't see a fit without giving up Bogarts, and they're not going to give up Bogarts. It's plain and simple.
Right.
I think it's kind of, it's not something that is worth spending a lot of time on because it's not going to happen. Right. And watch, it's going to happen tomorrow now, but whatever.
Just kind of like Stephen Drew's not walking through that door until he is.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, let's just do the final email. Our last email is from Michael Burns, and he asks a couple of questions. One, what do you make of the AAA catching situation? Obviously, Vasquez is the starter and best prospect, but I have been surprised that Ryan LaVarnway has gotten nearly as much time behind the plate as Dan Butler. Note, he sent this on May 8th. I'll double check on whether that's still the case, because frankly, Ryan LaVarnway is the starting first baseman there right now. Anyway, if the Sox need a catcher from AAA in the short term, is LaVarnway the guy who would be called up based on his familiarity with the Boston's team and pitching staff? If not, why is he getting time behind the plate at Butler's expense? One would think that if Butler was in line for a call-up, the Red Sox would want him to get as much time behind the plate as possible, even with Vasquez starting. And actually, let's answer that. Well, actually, I think we might have already gotten to two. It seems like the consensus on Mookie Betts from SB and others who cover prospects is that Mookie Betts is not a shortstop. Does that mean he's not thought to be a starting caliber shortstop, or that he's not even capable of backing up the position in a utility infield type of role? Also, how does Betts compare defensively to Jed Lowrie, who was also not thought to be a shortstop during his time in the minors, although he has ended up there as a big leaguer? The answer to the second question in 30 seconds, Ian. Why don't you give us that, because you remember seeing him in both places in Lowell.
He didn't look comfortable there. The arm is fringy for the position. It just wasn't going to work out.
Yeah.
I mean, he may be good paid in a pinch, but the fact that they're not even considering it says everything.
Exactly. It's one thing when you see a guy work at a position all the way up, always going to have to move, always going to have to move, and then he doesn't move. Like, I think Bogarts would be the comparison there.
Yeah, you don't move someone in Lowell if you think they have a future shortstop.
Yeah, it's different, really. It's not the same as Lowrie. Anyway, the catching situation. I did get asked this about Vasquez because, frankly, everyone sees what is going on with Ross and Pierzynski, and They want to see if Vasquez is ready, basically. So let's Vasquez real quick, ready for the majors or not? It's a one-word answer. I think we all agree. Matt, what do you think?
Yes.
Really? Oh, okay. I'll have to ask about that. Ian, what do you think?
Defensively, yes. Offensively, no.
Yeah, I think I agree there. Matt,
well,
you say
I agree
yes.
There, basically. Yeah. I wasn't spelling it up.
Matt,
I
mean, qualify your answer.
I basically say that he's defensively ready, and if they needed to call him up, he could handle it. I think he's got an approach at the plate. It's not going to be pretty at the plate at all, but I think that he could handle it. I mean, yeah, I just think defensively he could handle it, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, but if they needed someone, would it be Butler or would it be LeVar? I mean, it wouldn't be – well, okay, it wouldn't be LeVar and Way. We agree on this?
I think it'd be Butler.
Yeah.
Because he's on the 40-man still. They're carrying five catchers. He's a perfect backup catcher profile, because if he loses out on at bats for a few weeks, it doesn't really harm his development. If you throw him in a game, he's not going to kill you behind the plate defensively, and you might get a hit or two. I mean, it's the perfect profile for him.
Yeah, and actually, you know, this is all after this email was sent, but if you look at since May the 10th, Vasquez has caught 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, and Butler has caught 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Granted, the day before is LeVar and Way, and LeVar and Way was getting regular time until then, but I think perhaps in part because of what's going on in the majors, you're starting to see more of a Butler-Vasquez platoon with LeVar and Way popping in occasionally. Situation behind the plate. Plus, LeVar and Way's not hitting either, which is kind of also a problem because that's supposed to be the carrying tool. So, yeah, LeVar and Way's at 265, 357, 346.
Yeah, there's no power in there anymore.
Yeah, two home runs. So,
I just say on Butler versus Vasquez, I think if they needed to call someone up right now for a short amount of time, or even for a longer amount of time, it would probably be Butler. But if someone goes down for the year, like in another month, I think that they would definitely give serious consideration to keeping Vasquez up for the rest of the year and seeing what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because neither guy's hitting right now. I mean, Butler's at 204, 285, 287. Vasquez at 248, 301, 328. Neither is all that impressive, especially when you consider that Vasquez started out better and has cooled off. So with both of those guys, you're not going to expect much out of them at the plate. It's a matter of defensively what they can do. They're both capable. It's just a question of, do you call Vasquez up to be the second guy behind whichever one of the other two catchers is starting at that point? I think you would use Butler and let Vasquez get the at-bats in Pawtucket at this point still. But yeah, good question, because I also got that question on Twitter too. Which reminds me, I got a question on Twitter. I said we'd do in a podcast, so let me look. But you were going to say, Matt?
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's with Vasquez, it's a question of is he ready versus would they do it? I mean, I think like he's ready in some senses, like he could handle himself, but I don't think that they necessarily would promote him anytime sooner. I don't think he's pushing to replace one of them at this point at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, we thank you for your questions, and you can send your email questions into podcast@soxprospects.com. We really appreciate you guys sending in your questions. We welcome them, so have at it. Anything you want answered, hopefully we'll get to it. It in part depends on us having time, and in part, of course, depends on us doing a podcast. And actually, our last segment was dovetails with the question on Twitter that I got. I got a question from @DJMeeIn17. A number of players are pushing for a promotion, i.e. Betts, Shaw, and Ramos. When do you think that'll happen? So we want to talk a little bit, because every year around this time we start getting the, hey, when is X player going to be promoted questions. And I think it's worth talking about a little bit, and then we'll wrap up. But if you guys don't mind me starting, let me give my prospect promotion spiel. A player getting promoted does not depend on how well they are playing over the last week, nor over the last 2 weeks, nor over the last month. It's a matter of how ready they are for the next level. Sometimes that bears out in the numbers. Sometimes it really doesn't. You know, sometimes you'll see, oh, this guy's old for the level and he's hitting well. They should promote him. Well, it's not always that easy because, you know, where does he fit in at the roster at the next level? You know, when you look at, say, you know, the best, some of the best hitters in the system, for example, have been Mookie Betts, Reed Gragnani, and Wendell Rijo. For a time, they were the second baseman. And if I say for a time, because Betts is now also playing center, but they were the second baseman in Portland, Salem, and Greenville, respectively. It's not as easy as just promoting all three of them. It's a matter of if they're ready. It's a matter of how they look at the plate. It's a matter of developmental goals that they have at that level. So it's not so simple as just, hey, they're all hitting well. Let's promote them. Remember, it depends on how long a guy's been at a level. You may look at last year and say, oh, well, Xander Bogaerts was promoted from Portland to Pawtucket on this date. Well, Bogaerts had a month of at-bats the previous season at Portland as well. Mookie Betts entered this year with no experience in AA, and he was still young for the level. In fact, I think he was the 10th youngest player in the Eastern League when on opening day. Also, you need to look at, frankly, is there room at the next level? No matter how well Henry Owens pitches right now, he's not getting promoted to Pawtucket. There's no room in the Pawtucket rotation. Until Brandon Workman was promoted to make the start today, the Pawtucket rotation was Alan Webster, Anthony Renato, Matt Barnes, Ruby De La Rosa, and Brandon Workman. None of them were getting bumped from that rotation. There was no need to because those guys were all ahead of Owens for starting spots in the majors, spot starts and the like. There was no need to bump a guy like that up, no matter how good he was pitching. So you have to look at the bigger picture. In a vacuum, sure, it would be great to promote all of the prospects that are playing well and just cut all of the org guys. But frankly, minor league organizations are built on more than just 20 players. In fact, there are over 200 when you go all the way down to the Dominican Summer League. No organization has 200 prospects. It's just, you can't have that. You know, for every Blake Swihart in an organization, you need Matt Springs and Michael Brenly's to be good players on rosters who can do their job, which isn't necessarily to be groomed to be major leaguers. So I think we need to keep that in mind when we're looking at players. Yes, it would be great if they just cut every fringe guy and had nothing but, you know, future major leaguers in the system, but that's not the case. Sure, sometimes you can look at a guy like a Brian Johnson and a Cody Kukoc, look at the level they've been placed at to start the season and predict that they're going to be promoted within the first month, month and a half of the year, as happened with both of those guys, but that's not always going to be the case, and you really have to pick and choose your spots. So that's my spiel. Be patient with the promotions thing. Now, thank you for indulging me, gentlemen. really briefly on when guys might move up. I think we've kind of hinted at it a little bit, but maybe I thought we could just really quickly go down the system and, or maybe let's go up the system because Pawtucket's tough to really look at because, you know, promotions for Pawtucket depend on what's available in the majors. So maybe let's start in Greenville and work our way up. I don't think, and I think you guys agree, that there's really anybody else left in the extended spring training crew that could go to Greenville now that Ty Buttrey, Trey Ball, and Daniel McGrath are all in Greenville. We agree that there's no one else really left to move up. Is there anyone on the Greenville roster who you think is really pushing for a promotion to Salem and think that it might happen soonish? Obviously, Steven Drew accepted. How about you, Matt? Anyone?
Not.
Well, let me throw a name out there. This is probably a little bit more productive. Joe Gunkel. Joe Gunkel has had a very good start to the year. He started the other day, which for some reason made some people think he was getting promoted. In 13 games, including a start, in 28 innings, he's only given up 14 hits, 6 walks, 39 strikeouts. He's dominating. Promotion for him soon, yay or nay, say you, Matthew?
I would say yay. You know, relievers can sometimes move quickly when they're, you know, put in a relief role, depending, you know, if they do actually keep starting him or not. And he's not young for the level or anything, so he's a guy who can move. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he should have started in Salem to start the year, so.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. He was a candidate to potentially start the year there too. But the fact of the matter is, of course, not a ton of room in the bullpen in Salem. And we might as well just touch on bullpens generally right now. I think every level has bullpen guys that are dominating between Gunkel and Jonathan Arrow in Greenville. In Salem, I think, let me look real quick. I think Kyle Martin has very good numbers right now. Diane Diaz, let's see, Justin Haley, Cody Kukoc. Maybe not so much. Yeah, Martin's okay. He's got 38-4 K to walk ratio in 28 and a third innings. But that's, I just don't see the guy you cut in Salem. And that's the thing. It's how you make room. They've got Austin Maddox on the TIA right now to make room. But I agree with you that Gunkel could happen soon. Arrow maybe soon. He's like, I just don't get why Arrow has such good numbers all the time.
No, he throws hard though.
Yeah, I guess that's
he's
true.
He's mid-90s. Let me look back. I saw him a bunch last year, and he was, he's like 90 to 94, heavy fastball. He's got a changeup and some breaking ball thing. He can't decide if it's a curveball or slider, but yeah, he's big guy. I think he's like 230 probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see how it plays out of the pen. Mm-hmm. It's the heavy fastball type.
Fair enough. Since we might get asked. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was to say, are we moving off Greenville? Because I have two guys in the lineup who I could see getting promoted.
In Greenville?
Yeah.
No, I was going to get to one, Carlos Asuaje.
Yeah, he was who I was going to, one of my two, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Carlos Asuaje, promote or no?
Yes.
Just the numbers on the year, 319, 457, 551 with six triples, three bombs. Yay or nay? You say yay.
Yeah. He's not that young either. I don't know why. I guess I think of him as a younger guy, but
he's 22. Well, because he got drafted last year.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not old. Yeah. I mean, he's 22. No, he's that's fine for the level.
It's fine. Yeah.
Ian.
Yes.
Asuaje. Move him up.
Yep. I mean, there's nothing blocking him there either because he's playing out of position with Greenville.
He's played the outfield too, right?
Yeah.
He's playing everywhere. Yeah. Second, he's playing second, third, and left.
Right,
and
it's interesting.
And if you look at Salem, there's no one to block him. They have Jonathan Roof DHing, Ryan.
Well, Roof's more of a utility guy. I know that's what we have on the Salem page. He's playing all over the place.
There's very little in Salem lineup blocking anyone, I would say.
Well, that's why the other guy I was going to say is Jake Romanski for catcher, because a couple things on him. He actually was highly rated coming out of the draft, even though I think he was a 14th round pick or something. Mm-hmm. But he can hit a little bit actually, and he's a catcher. He can actually pick it too. So he's someone who I'm kind of interesting to me.
Does he have a decent amount of steals too? I'm just looking. Yeah. 7-2. That's interesting, I guess.
And I remember with Lowell last year, he got hurt. So he missed most of the season, but he started off a little slowly, but was kind of rounding into form right before he got hurt and was putting together some interesting at-bats and was someone who was a little intriguing. So I think
the starter in Salem is Carson Blair in 102 at-bats. He's hitting 167, 307, 402, which is one of the more interesting lines I've seen in the system this year that I hadn't really been paying attention to. So 46 strikeouts and 102 at-bats.
Well, that's the thing with Carson Blair is he cannot recognize any breaking ball or off-speed pitch, but he's got some pop. And I just remember there's, not going to say who, but someone in the system made that exact comment to me when we were watching a spring training game a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And was like, if he only knew how to hit, man, because he can just crush it, but can't hit.
One guy that hasn't been mentioned that has been mentioned on the board, Jansen Witt, is a candidate for player of the month. His current full season line is 348, 440, 568. He is, in fact, old for the level. He's a college draftee last year who is 24 years old. He was a senior draftee out of Texas Christian. Promote or not, Ian, we'll start with you.
No. Because, I mean, I when I saw him last year, I didn't think anything. I mean, I could be wrong. He could have changed something. But with Lowell last year, he was – out of that infield trio of him, Asuaje, and Greg Nani, he was by far the one who I rated the least out of the three of them. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not surprised with what Asuaje is doing. As I think I mentioned in the scratches I wrote about him last year, he was someone who really interested me. And the same thing with Greg Nani, can put together ABs. He's got a short swing, gets on base. So, but Witty just, he didn't do anything for me when I saw him.
Just to make sure, Reed Gragnani is already in Salem, just to clarify. I'm not saying you said otherwise, but just for those of you who may not know.
Yeah, I think Witty last year in Lowell hit 121 with, it was bad.
Matt Witt, Witty.
Is it Witt? Yeah, I was looking.
I think it's Witt.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Witt, but we don't have anything on our pronunciation page. But yeah, I was going to say he's playing mostly first base. Old for the level, so no, I don't think there's any.
Which
rush.
Is open-ish in Salem right now, but that's also because both Matt Gedman and David Chester are on the DL to the extent that they would block him. It could just depend on what their injuries are, too. If
you got Tim Roberson there. Come on, his dad.
Well, Roberson who was in Greenville and did get the bump. To me, with Witt, it's wherever the spot is. If Greenville's the better spot for him and for the organization, he's an org guy.
He really is gonna have to prove it, keep proving it. Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll see if the spot is open. If he does get promoted, I think that says more about what the Gedman and Chester injuries are that have them on the DL than anything else. I think that's more or less the guys to mention in Greenville who are dominating. Than anything else, because Kukuk's already up. Okay, Salem. Looking at the numbers in Salem, there's nothing much there to talk about. Is there anyone worth looking at promotions imminent in Salem for either of you, Matt?
Just Reed Gragnani is the only one that I see. At all, really.
Gragnani's hitting .324, .400, .421. Has cooled off a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Still doesn't have a home run, but I don't know that I see it, but worth discussing.
I think probably more like a second half promotion for him. There's no one really else.
I could see him getting promoted if one Betts gets promoted, because they're going to need a second baseman.
Right.
I disagree with you guys. I think Derek Gibson's your second baseman, or Hiker Meneses.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot he was on the roster. Yeah,
Hiker Meneses is in Portland now, so I don't think there's a spot. I think Gragnani's in Salem all year. I think
you're right.
He's a guy that played at UVA that is good for local papers. He's an org guy. As much as I love to pump up Oahu, I don't see it happening unless there's a need in Portland for an infielder. And even at that point, it might be Roof, who's kind of the token.
It could be Ryan Dent, who's,
Ryan Dent, who spent like 3 years in Portland before going back to Salem this year.
And he's not even really hitting now in Salem.
Did he cool off? Yeah, he did cool off. He's like 265, 380, 432, and he was much higher than that like two weeks ago.
Even. Oh, that's even higher than he was, I think.
Really?
I mean, not
who who bats cleanup for Salem?
Isn't it like Ryder and
Ryder's in Greenville. Who is that cleanup hitter?
Roberson. I meant Roof instead of Ryder.
I think the lineup that I remember them having is something to the effect of Johnson followed by Dent and then Gragnani and then Roberson. Martinez might be in there now that he's off the DL too.
I would want to say Kevin Heller somewhere in there too.
Heller, Major, and Tavares basically rotate between the three corner between the two corner outfield spots. Oh no, Roof hits at the top of the order. Roof hits second right now.
Roof hits second or third.
He hits second. Yeah. Hmm. At any rate, there are open. There's no one there that's keeping anyone from getting promoted.
There's some good pitching prospects there, but just no one who's really.
Well, that's
on the
where
verge.
I was going to go next. Simon Mercedes. Is a guy who has generated interest.
I think he's probably there all year, right?
I think he is too. Ian, yep. You do too.
Absolutely.
Luis Diaz, in theory, you could say might get promoted, but he's in 9 starts, .350 ERA, 44 hits, 13 walks, 31 Ks, and 46 and a third. I see him there most of the year. I don't see him bumping even a Keith Couch out of the Portland rotation, personally. I don't know about
I kind of forgot about him, but he did spend some last year. He had pretty good results there last year too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Diaz was only there for like two starts.
Yeah, he's only there for two starts. Yeah, so I guess, yeah, he's not really on the verge. Maybe towards the end of the year, I'd say.
Yeah, maybe a cup.
Yeah.
Okay, moving along to the Portland Sea Dogs. we kind of mentioned this already. Travis Shaw, because we kind of, Ian, you had given your thoughts. Do you think he's imminent?
I wouldn't say imminent. I would say sometime in
soon.
The only thing I was thinking about with him is it is kind of crowded for at-bats at first base and DH with Snyder and LaVarnway, and he's not exactly a major league protection player, I don't think, at this point.
No, not yet. I don't think. That's the thing to remember, I think, too, is a guy getting to Portland – I'm sorry, guy getting promoted to Pawtucket more or less means they would be okay. More or less means they would be okay calling him up to Boston if they needed to.
I just look at it. He's got almost a season's worth. I think he's got over a season's worth of at-bats now at Portland. Because between this year and last year, and there's just a point where he's just crushing pitching there. And if that continues for the foreseeable future, what's the point of keeping him there?
I think the promotion happens once they give up on both LaVarnway and as Brandon Snyder as a major league protection player. Snyder weirdly is only hitting .217. But is slugging .500 because he's got 8 home runs, which might lead the system, I think. But he's also struck out 40 times in 106 at-bats.
Yeah, Shaw has like 12 home runs.
Oh, Shaw does have 12 home runs. That's right. Yeah, 11. That's right. Okay, never mind. Yeah, I think it could. That's one that I could see happening All-Star break. I could see them waiting till the All-Star break.
It could also be, remember, that they like to give the guys the reward of playing in the All-Star game.
Yeah, which he would.
Except for who was it last year? I want to say it was like some pitcher that they, I think it might have been Sergio Gomez that they called up right before the All-Star game, but yeah.
Mookie Betts. I could see it happening.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting for it any day, I feel like. Maybe with the outfield thing, you know, that they want to keep him down a little longer to get some reps there before they start throwing him out there in Pawtucket, but you know, we've seen that happen with Bogarts and others switching positions at Pawtucket, so it's not like that doesn't happen. So, yeah, I really think...
I actually have a conspiracy theory. if they're going to play Betts and they think he's in the big league potential for this year, why wouldn't they leave him in Portland and get used to playing the wall?
It depends if they're going to play him in left. I mean, in center.
That's what I mean. If they're going to actually consider him as a corner outfield option... Wouldn't you leave him there to get used to playing the wall?
If you're going to play him in left, that's an interesting idea.
So, I don't know. Yeah. That just popped into my head when we were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's that, but it's also you're playing half your games on the road, too.
Well, yeah, obviously, but, I mean, playing the wall is it's not the easiest thing, so I don't know.
You were going to say something.
Yeah, you're balancing that with, obviously, you know, keeping his bat in the right development, and so, you know, it's sort of... Two aspects that you have to consider, I guess. But that does make sense. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there isn't as big a gap in the pitching from AA to AAA as there is from high A to AA.
Right. Yeah, we've seen them call people up directly from Portland. More like pitchers, I'd say.
Pitchers. You know, yeah, I can't remember many position players that's happened to. It's happened where they've been ready for Pawtucket and the promotion was imminent and they just went ahead and bumped them up to Boston, I think.
Like Jake Britton last year, right? Didn't he skip Portland?
He had one start in Pawtucket, I think, or something. I think he had one Pawtucket start before he got called up. He was on the Jonathan Papelbon plan. Devin Marrero, the current starting shortstop in Pawtucket, is Mike McCoy. Thoughts?
I think that's more of a second half to later season promotion. Like, I definitely think he's going to make it to Pawtucket unless he falls off the table with the bat, but, I don't see that as imminent, really.
Same.
I would think it were imminent, except if he were more of a hit first prospect. I think with the crap that, with what Bogarts and Bradley are going through right now at the plate, I think the last thing they would want to do is bump Marrero to Pawtucket to potentially bump Marrero to Boston near the end of the year to not hit as great as the glove is. Remember, Brock Holt's coming back down once Steven Drew's ready. Well,
that's what I was about to say, that you have Steven Drew and Brock Holt ahead of him, and I'm pretty sure he's not on the 40-man, so I don't think he goes on the big league roster this year.
No, I could say he'll get. I think he'll get a cup in Pawtucket in the second half as well. Henry Owens.
It depends on what happens with Brandon Workman and when Clay Buchholz inevitably gets hurt, who gets called up.
At this point, actually, before you say anything, Matt, I will note that Stephen Wright is starting in Portland tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So even more congestion in the Pawtucket rotation. So, yeah, I mean, Owens has been been pretty inconsistent this year, too. I mean, his numbers are good overall, but he has had some starts where he's walked a ton of guys and sort of barely gotten out of it, that type of thing. And other than that, like we mentioned, obviously the Pawtucket rotation is very stacked. And with pitchers, like we said, it's not as big a deal to get them a ton of time at Pawtucket. So, and there's no chance he's going to make it to the majors this year with the amount of guys they have in front of him. So I don't see there being a big rush there. So yeah, I don't think it's going to happen imminently.
I think it happens in August, if at all. And I think it only happens if the Red Sox punt and trade away a starting pitcher or just cut loose someone like Jake Peavy, which I don't think is going to happen at any rate. Or if someone goes on the DL for the year and they need to keep a Workman-type guy up for the year.
Well, that's what I was saying, that I think it depends on how long DuPont's out and who gets inevitably hurt.
Or trade involving one or more Pawtucket starters, which I think is a strong possibility. So if there's a spot that opens up because someone like Webster, Renato, Barnes, De La Rosa gets traded, I think that's the only way he sees Pawtucket this year. Otherwise, he starts there next year.
Well, that's the thing. There's no need to rush him.
None. You've got five guys ahead of him for starts in the majors. There's no need to rush him, even if he starts dominating in Portland.
And he's not someone you're going to want to bring up maybe to, you know, control his innings later and help out of the bullpen. Owens is not the type of arm you want doing that. So
right. Last ones, and we'll do this as a group. Noah Ramirez, Miguel Celestino, Michael Olmsted, who are all pitching very well in Portland right now. Any of them getting the bump anytime soon, gentlemen?
Well, I would say yes for Olmsted, but I don't really know what his status is at this point, if you still consider him a prospect. Seems like if they still had plans for him, he would be up in Pawtucket. So I'm not sure what the deal is with him, but he's had performance and background to be able to pitch at Pawtucket, I would say. But I think the other two stay down for now.
Mm-hmm. Ian?
No.
None of them.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. They're relievers. Whatever.
Thanks for playing along. Well, no, I appreciate it.
Well, when discussing promotions with relievers, it's such a crapshoot because, I mean, as Matt was saying, like Michael Olmsted has pretty much destroyed AA whenever he's been it with the Red Sox, but last year he got lit in AAA with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, he's 27. I mean, if you'd think he would be up there already, I mean, because it's not like the bullpen in Pawtucket is filled with a bunch of prospects. It's a lot of, you know, minor league org guys.
You've got guys like Tommy Lane who are pitching. Tommy Lane is pitching very well. I think people just ignore him because he's not a guy who came up through the system. But meanwhile, he's got a 32-12 K to walk rate, 19 hits and 27 innings.
I mean, he's got a cup of coffee, but he's an org guy. I mean, I don't know. I just look at it that if you push me on it, I don't think Celestino, I think, would get lit in AAA because he just still has no idea where it's going. It's definitely improved, but he still has such command issues that he can just get, you know, he'd be a candidate for one of those, you know, two-thirds of an inning, seven hits, six run outings every time out there. And you don't really want that. I maybe Noe Ramirez if they think they want to maybe fast track him to the big leagues at some point, but
That's what I was going to say. Noe Ramirez in July, I think, goes up. I don't think it happens quite yet because there's no need to rush him. But I could see him getting the move up, especially if Rich Hill ever decides to opt out, which he apparently isn't. If crotch grabbing Chris Resop ever, you know, depending on how long he sticks around. If that spot opens up, I could see him taking it. But I think a lot of this congestion gets cleared up. I think there's a trade coming at some point for something. There's just too many pitchers at that level to not do something with some of them. whether it's a trade or whether it's moving one or two of them to the bullpen, a la Drake Britton. I think something's going to break here, and I think that's when you're going to start seeing some of these guys move. So, all right, well, we're already way over on time, so I think we're going to go ahead and QL Chombo if you guys have nothing else to add. I want to thank you all for listening, for the download. We appreciate it. I have some tacos I need to go eat. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/SoxProspects. Follow us on Twitter. It's all at the beginning of the show. Just hit stop, hit the back button on your iPod or computer and listen there. News.soxprospects.com. Rate and review us. Send us questions on Twitter. Send questions to podcast@soxprospects.com. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We know it's been a minute.
And don't forget to check out our draft coverage coming up as well.
Draft coverage is coming up. Get ready for the... What are they picking? 29? What's the
27 pick? And 33.
27 and 33. Yeah. No more Stephen Drew pick, but that's okay. No,
it's inevitably going to be two starting pitchers too. So
I have faith they'll draft a hitter this year. Frankly, because they have nowhere else to put pitchers. But
no, this draft is so pitcher heavy though.
Yeah,
true. Which is, I mean, there's so many arms available that
I want Derek Fisher because he goes to UVA, and that's all. Even if that's not necessarily the best pick.
Is UVA good at baseball this year?
They're very good at baseball this year. They were number one for most of the year, you may have heard. Yeah.
No, I haven't heard. That's why I asked.
Yes. Yeah. UVA is damn good at baseball. And Charlottesville is a lovely place to live as well.
Not as good as Ann Arbor, but whatever.
No, screw Ann Arbor. I'm gonna go to Salem and ask Reed Graniani about this someday. Anyway.
This is Devon.
let's cut it.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at some point. Eventually. Thanks, everybody.